Right, and welcome to Open Paddock Podcast 43. We are here yet again on this Wednesday evening to bring you your weekly dose of motorsport garb. Sean here, as always, with the Red Dead USAC Crusader Mike.
Good evening, everyone. Yes. I would like to say that John Marston is dead. Long live his son.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
What is that?
That's just a reference from the game. If you're a fan of the game, you'll probably understand. Otherwise, just say I've been enjoying Red Dead.
I've been enjoying. No, I'm just kidding. I haven't played.
Nice.
I
will say, just like I said at the beginning, the controls are pretty awful. But the game was a blast, you know? There are some good moments in the game, and it's actually a really good story. But, yeah. Actually, a very thought-provoking game as well, which is something that you don't get very often with video games.
No, not anymore. They're all pretty much stamped right out of the factory.
Yeah. So anyway.
I have been on vacation this week.
Oh, very nice.
Yes.
Look at you.
I actually have done nothing but watch World Cup games.
Wow. How are you with your Vuvuzela?
I love it. You know, that's one of the things. It was a really ignorant comment that ESPN made, you know, talking about how those horns need to go away and they're taken away from the game, and how are you supposed to sell your game to, you know, people if you've got these stupid horns going off? And I'm like, it doesn't matter. They don't need to sell their game to anybody. It's already the most popular sport on the planet, man. Where have you been? And I like it. I mean, obviously these guys have never been to a real football match, because when you go, you have singing, chanting, bells, drums. I mean, it's awesome. So the horns are just part of it, and it's a South African cultural, you know, piece that is why this World Cup is special. If you don't like it, just don't watch it. If you do like it, so, you know, just catch the highlights on SportsCenter.
I heard them say that the din from the constant drone of vuvuzelas in the background can get up to something. The vuvuzela can actually approach the sound of about 127 decibels, which is where ringing in the ears begins and pain in ears begins.
Nice.
So they're actually saying that you should probably take hearing protection. Though I did find a great website that has, you know, all these crazy things all the way up to like 300 decibels as to what effect it has on the body.
Holy cow.
Oh, it's bad stuff, man. 257 decibels is the sound a nuclear bomb makes, a 1 megaton bomb.
What?
So seriously, that's got some interesting stuff. You should check this out. www.makeitlouder.com. Pretty sweet.
I actually have a app on my iPhone that actually produces said noise. Not to that decibel level, of course, but it's loud, so you know, it happens. And as a matter of fact, let's see here. Oh, wait. It's not doing it. Oh, dang it. My giant World Cup horn does not work.
There it is.
All right, you see? The World Cup, it's a beautiful thing. But we've got a jam-packed show for you this evening. We've got the Around the World bit where we're going to get into some of the races that are going on. If you happen to hear some background noise, I have little spawnlings running around making too much noise, so disregard them. They'll be locked in the cupboard and given food rations accordingly. By the time they come out, they'll probably look like the North Korean soccer team. Oh! Just kidding. Just kidding. But we'll go around the globe. We had a couple international races with Formula One and, of course, Le Mans. We'll get into some of the news surrounding Formula One, as it'll be the big topic tonight, as well as some other things regarding Le Mans. Even though we don't really cover the series as much as we used to anymore, you know, we still like to keep our eyes on it because class racing is fun. And then, obviously, a couple of rally stories and then some IndyCar as well. So, jam-packed show.
Yeah, sounds like it. Let's jump right in, though, around the world of motorsports. First things first, Canada took place this weekend. Well, we'll get into that second.
Yeah, we'll do Le Mans.
First, First is Le Mans, where the Peugeots put in some crazy good lap times in qualifying. They were outdistancing the Audis in the race, but one by one, they were Adrian Newey'd out of the race.
Nice. Yeah, it was surprising. We had, you know, talking laps in excess of 3:20, which is just flying for those cars, especially. But you know, you can be as fast as you want, but in order to win the race, you have to finish, or as Bob Varsha says, you must qualify. Yeah. Well, in this case, you must finish, and that obviously we knew when I picked Audi. That is one of the things I picked them on, was one, the reliability, and two, the race strategy is second to none. And sure enough, that proved to be the winner of the day, especially a lot of controversy with Anthony Davidson driving his Peugeot. He got into a bit of a spot a couple times and caught nasty flack for it. But, you know, the V12 diesels were not working the way they were supposed to for the boys at Peugeot, therefore they come away empty-handed from the whole ordeal. So even the Orica Peugeots were putting in great lap times, faster than the Audis. So stinks.
But the LMP2 entry, Honda Performance Development, which formerly was the Acura ARX01. They ended up fifth overall, which is a phenomenal effort for an LMP2 car.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in the end, you just can't beat the Audis when they're reliable.
Yeah.
And all three Audi teams ended up taking home the Jeff Gordon trophies.
Nice.
With the big 24 on
nice.
Top.
Nice. Yeah, they had a actually, I think it was the number 7 Audi with Christensen actually had an accident and was able to come home in third after the fact.
Yeah, and that was actually just 3 laps down from the 397 laps put up by the Rockefeller Bernard Dumas entry.
Yes, the number 7 machine collided with the number 79 BMW Art car that was actually driven by Andy Priaw, who's a very handy touring car driver, but unfortunately kind of got in the way of the Audi, took the Audi, spun it around, caused some damage, but they were able to get it back out only 3 laps down, so well done. Good to see that Audi graced the top of the all 3 steps of the podium, because to be quite honest, I can't stand Peugeot.
Nice.
So, sorry, boys, but I just don't overly like close cockpit cars. I'm more of a traditionalist myself. So,
So and that leads us straight on in into Formula One.
Oh, Canada.
Oh, Canada.
Welcome back.
Such a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, it was a spectacular race, actually. Quite a bit of hustle and bustle at the beginning of the race. Seriously, Felipe Massa turned into a Ferrari pinball, and was bouncing off the Force India car repeatedly.
Well, that's what happens when you qualify as poorly as Felipe did.
Slap.
Yes, slap.
In the end, it was a great day for the McLaren boys. Lewis Hamilton and Jenson Button take the second consecutive 1-2, really sticking it to Red Bull with, I do believe, Fernando Alonso was also on the podium in third position. So well done to the Ferrari boys, finally showing that they have some merit, seeing as though ever since this whole acquisition of Fernando Alonso and everything has been going on, and we'll be better, we promise. Yeah, you're really not that much better off than what you were. You're better, but not much. So,
Well, by the way, about Lewis, called it.
Oh yeah, well done. Well done.
Well. Yeah. Interesting race overall. I mean, there's no reason not to just jump right into it. Canada proved to be one of the more interesting challenges for the teams yet this season. In all these races, you know, only a handful of times has anybody tried a two-stop strategy. This time around at Canada, the tire degradation was such that it dictated that multiple stops were necessary, not just two, three, and four stops were necessary.
Yep. What do you call them? The option tires did not last
at all.
No.
But, you know, in the end, that's what we were kind of hoping would happen this season when they went to these funky new regulations. And it just didn't happen. I mean, basically, the only reason that we're seeing them stop at all is because of the one rule that's in there that says you must compete on both sets of tires.
Yeah, indeed. And that was not to be the case.
Yeah, certainly not. And but you know, look at the race that ensued because of it. You know, you throw it out the window. The Red Bulls were on a different strategy. It didn't pan out for them. Everybody else was, you know, when are they going to stop? We don't know. There's graining. You know, this looks bad. It left some things up to question in a season where nothing has been up to question during the race.
Yeah, Red Bull domination basically. Yes. Or McLaren. So
which technical gremlin will keep Sebastian Vettel from winning this race?
Gearbox. But overall, Canada was a great race, though. So
yeah,
we'll get into more of its little finer intricacies here in just a moment. But you know what? Canada was so good, it gets a
nice. Canada.
I'm going to be playing with this thing all day. Somebody take the phone away.
See, you know, these people complain about the Vuvuzela or these horns that the South Africans are loving on. But, you know, we got our own kind of stuff like that in Formula One. You got the people with the air horns and the smoke bombs. And
yeah, right. And in rally, you don't have anything. You have snowmen and dudes who pull their pants down.
Nice. And very large rocks on the stage.
And those don't make very much noise at all.
No.
Yet just as damaging.
Yeah.
So, I guess before we get too much into the specifics of what happened during the race, as is said by Mizwar Varsha, before you race, you must qualify. Yes. Well, that's what happened. And Lewis Hamilton was able to take the pole position on the very last lap, much to the promise and delight of the Canadian fans. Don't get that, but they
actually
liked it.
Got pretty loud. I mean, you know, the place was sold out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's just a sign of, you know, the strength of the Canadian market. The Canadians love open wheel racing. They love all forms of racing. Heck, they have a nationwide race there, too. So
nice.
They embrace all people who turn left and right.
Yes. But Lewis Hamilton breaks up the Red Bull duo. However, Webber and Vettel would start second and third, respectively, with Alonso in P4. Button would round out the McLaren in the top five. Some of the things to take note, Mercedes GP, who had actually been setting real great pace during the practice sessions, something happened and qualifying just didn't pan out. Rosberg would end up starting P10, with Herr Schumacher starting P13, a hefty near 1.5 seconds off of Lewis Hamilton's pace. And yes, we are talking about a guy who's won the race 7 times. So not the best run for them. But outside of that, really, no surprises. You get the slows. You got the Cosworth into the grid, the baby Ferrari into the grid, which falls right above Cosworth. And then you've got the rest of the reasonably good entrants. Force India surprising a couple people, with Viantonio Yuzi actually pulling a P6 out of nowhere. Really kind of restapling his position with the team after what has been a pathetic year after the kind of year they had last year. So I think we're kind of starting to see with Force India that last year, you know, they weren't all that great, but they have pace when it comes down to these places that don't need much downforce. Whenever whenever you're talking long straightaways or any kind of straightaways and less corners, you will probably have a Forrest India finishing real well. So that's what exactly happened with Viantonio Yuzzi in sixth, as well as teammate Adrian Sutil or Sutil in P9. So great run for them as well. So Mercedes showing all right, I guess, during qualifying. So yay. So the field was set. So
very nice. Yes, Felipe Massa, like we said, he ended up qualifying seventh, which put him in the pinball position on the grid.
Yep, got it. Can't blame anybody but yourself at that point.
Oh, yeah, seriously.
So, but yeah, right at the beginning of the race, it was chaos, man. Just simple chaos everywhere. Kobayashi in Champions Wall. Massa was the human pinball, bouncing off of anything that moved. So just a lot of stuff was really going on. Really active and sporty first part start to the race. So and that gave both Alonso, Hamilton, and all the Red Bull guys a chance to really start battling it out for positions. And these guys were battling. They were not just going round circles. And they never really got a chance to fan out. And, man, the driving was pretty fierce amongst all the drivers all race long.
You throw in Canada as – you know, the track itself, just like we talked about the promoter saying last week, it's the track, stupid.
Yeah. Basically,
basically his comment, you know, the essence is the track. The essence is the race course. Doesn't matter if we've got the Shanghai facilities or the Abu Dhabi facilities, we have a racetrack. And you cannot say anything against that track. Now, the drivers and the FIA may claim, you know, it's just not safe because you've got a lot of concrete walls in close proximity to the track. But let's put this bluntly. That's why the racing is so good there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a road course. With walls that are similar to a street course.
Yep.
The walls are a little bit off of the side of the track. They're not exactly, you know, the sides of the track like you have on a street course, but that's why the racing there is so good. It's a big risk reward. When you go into a corner and you go in too hot, you don't have a runoff area.
You're done.
You're done. So you have to go into the corners, and if you're going in too hot, man, you got to hit the brakes. And a driver's mistake, which would be mitigated by a runoff area, and he wouldn't lose a position. Well, when he has to get on the binders to correct his mistake, well, then you give up spots.
A lot of spots.
That's why the racing there is so good, because the drivers have to respect the track so much more than anywhere else they go. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can say at Monaco they have to respect the track too, but the speeds at Monaco are much slower.
Yeah. Canada's flying. High straightaways. Yeah. You go through the last straightaway into that quick chicane with that Champions Wall right there. Mess up, I dare you.
Yeah, I mean, the only place you seem to have any runoff is basically going into the hairpin.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got a big runoff to the end of that. Now, if you get all squirrely at the entry to the hairpin, you turn into a Bobby Kay scenario. But this time.
No, not this time. The race was impressive. Weber, now, interesting strategy with Weber. He had a bit of a tire dilemma. Where they left him out.
His first dilemma was he qualified well.
Yeah.
But then they had to swap the gearbox.
Yeah. Swap the gearbox, drop you five places. Thank you, sir. Have another. And shut up about the turkey thing. I mean, what?
Nice.
I didn't say that. Gearbox change. Then they tried to run him extra long on some tires. They're trying to see if they could get him to last, because obviously he's going to be in the catbird seat winning the race if he can get him to last. But everybody knew that this was not going to happen after we started to see the degradation trends. So they proceeded to leave him out there as long as possible until the leaders were right on him.
Yeah.
And by that time it was too late. You stop, you're going to lose the spots. If you stay on the track, you're going to lose the spots. So, it was really we're screwed kind of thing.
Well, and part of everybody's strategy, I'm sure, was figuring in the safety car that never happened.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that was actually probably the most surprising thing for this race at Canada,
yep.
that we didn't get a full course safety car. Because remember, you know, how many times have we seen drivers end up getting basically black flagged for going out of pit lane with the red light on? Nice.
Well, yeah, I think they said it was something like since 97 or something like – they gave a year. I didn't catch the year since the last time we had a race without a safety car. But one could argue that a safety car was warranted during the race, because if you remember looking at the lead-up to the chicane heading onto the front straightaway there, there was heavy debris, a lot of carbon fiber all over the place. And, you know, it was out onto the racing line and was getting kicked off. So, I mean, you know, I don't know if it was just to maybe put on a good show or try not to ruin the show with safety cars, but there was debris there. And one could make the argument that a safety car was kind of warranted for that. So,
yeah.
Another guy needing a safety car, who needed a safety car oh so bad, was Michael Schumacher. God, I hate watching it. I hated watching it. It was painful as a fan.
Yeah.
But Michael really fell off, was never a factor at all in any position, not even really a factor for the points this weekend.
Yes, and as he got passed by both Force Indias, which Force Indias were flying, like you said, and then both STRs.
Mm-hmm.
Ouch.
Mm-hmm. And actually hit Felipe Massa on the last lap. So he's like, hey, suck it, teammate.
Yeah.
You always be number two to me.
Nice. Nice. Where's Rubens? I want to give him some action, too.
Yeah, right. So, you know, it was a bad day for the Mercedes boys. Rosberg was able to take charge and move the car up to sixth place after the 10th place run. Mm-hmm. So, again, outracing the cobbler. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm still not, you know, again, and this was the worst thing, too, because as much as I know that this has not been the kind of comeback that Schumacher's really been probably hoping for or dreaming of, the one thing I hate, however much it's merited or not, is people who, as soon as the race was over, Schumacher, he's leaving at the end of the year.
Nice.
All the
nice.
Skeptics came out of the woodwork after those couple races and were all over him yet again. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, the guy has bad races. He's still developing the car.
Well, there's one thing that came out this weekend that is a concerning thing for Schumacher. Certainly, I mean, his results were bad, but Nico finished better than him.
Again.
And the question does become, you know, they built the car around Schumacher, this updates and everything like that and the development of the car. Mm-hmm. If Nico can win in that car, if Nico can beat his teammate in that car that's tailored to Schumacher's preferences, then you really have to start worrying.
Yeah.
But who knows? I mean, it's just like McLaren. They run different brakes for both of their drivers. It could be that we're seeing now that this new spec has been there for a few weeks. Nico is starting to tailor that car to his tastes as well.
Yeah.
So you could read a lot into that, but it is interesting to note that Nico is still having better luck than his teammate.
And nobody ever said that Nico Rosberg was bad at setting up a car.
No.
I don't want to put off the persona that I think that Nico Rosberg can't set up a car and that this is ridiculous that he's, you know, still out racing him. I mean, I don't like it, but, you know, the guy is talented. He can drive a car and he can set up a car. And that's just one of the things, you know, that you have to deal with. But you know what I say to all the Nico Rosberg or all the Nico Rosberg and Michael Schumacher hating his hash? I just say to them.
Nice.
Yeah, see.
Please make that stop.
I'm putting it away. No, not at all. It's going to happen all show. Actually, when I got it the other night, I hit it like 17 times in a row, and it just kept going. It was awesome. I felt like one of those hired Chinese guys who were actually paid to cheer for North Korea. Did you hear about that?
No, I did not.
Yeah, we'll get back to racing in a second. This is World Cup time, baby. There are rumor out there that the Chinese hired paid actors to go to the World Cup because, you know, obviously North Korea can't do anything, and God forbid if North Koreans actually see the outside world, they'll have a whole new perception on things. So,
nice. So
what I've been hearing in the news is that the Chinese actually hired actors to go to South Africa and wear all North Korea gear and only attend the North Korea games.
The Chinese hired them.
Yes. Well, because, you know, the Chinese are kind of, you know, yes, friends with the North Koreans or whatever. That whole thing of the Korean War, you know, who knew?
Yeah.
So, you know, they still get along well. They put up with it. And they hired a bunch of guys, sent them down there to the World Cup. And they had, you know, they were sporting North Korea garb. And that's where you get all those fans. Because could you imagine if you actually let North Koreans out of the country and they seen how good life was outside of what they're dealing with?
Hey, look, they have food.
Yeah, right. We can eat. Wait, you said the Americans ate babies. They're nothing but more than human beings like us. There'd be anarchy and the whole entire regime would collapse, and that would be bad. So, you know. All right, back to racing anyways.
So, results of the weekend. Lewis Hamilton now stands in the driver's championship lead at 109 points. Jensen is at 106, and Weber is at 103.
Ooh.
Back a few more is Fernando Alonso at 94 and Sebastian Vettel at 90. Now, all these guys, you look at that, and they're all within a race win of the, you know, the lead.
Yeah, they're within striking distance.
Then it's a step down to Nico Rosberg at 74, Kubica at 73, Mas at 67, and then beyond that, there's no chance.
The cobbler!
Yeah.
At 34 points, Herr Schumacher.
Yeah, so
about to be overtaken by Force India's Adrian Sutil.
Nice. Certainly, the season's not shaping up how Michael Schumacher envisioned. I still think that he's going to the latter half of the season is going to be having better results than his teammate on a consistent basis. However, currently, that has not been the case. Now, McLaren Mercedes pulls ahead in the constructors' lead, 215. Red Bull at 193, Ferrari at 161, everybody else, it doesn't matter.
Nice. Nice.
And Ferrari is getting into the it doesn't matter position. A lot of it is based on the results of said Felipe Massa, who is lagging behind his teammate dramatically. And I would probably go ahead and call the Constructors' Championship to be McLaren.
Nice. Nope, going to Red Bull.
Think so?
Yep.
I think the drivers is going to Red Bull, and the constructors will end up at McLaren because they are having far more consistent results from their two drivers. Whereas Red Bull, while they have good results from both drivers, they just never happen on the same weekend.
Yeah. I think you know, there's still a lot of racing left, though. We're not even halfway into the season yet, so I mean, or maybe teetering right around the halfway point, but you know, still a lot of races left to go, so we'll have to see what happens if Red Bull can fix their problems. But, you know, it was such a great race at Canada, but what would be a race without the stewards?
Oof, yes.
Yes, there were incidents, ladies and gentlemen, and they were numerous. Yeah, they were numerous. Some more easily picked out than others. If you're watching the race coverage, Robert Kubica was guilty of one said infraction off of one of the craziest things I've ever seen. He was adjudged to have carried out a dangerous entry into pit lane, a breach of Appendix L, Chapter 4, Article 4C of the 2010 FI International Sporting Code. I was reading poll. So sorry.
Nice.
And then it goes on further to say that the poll was reprimanded for his actions. If you remember, he was dancing around with, what was it, a Force India?
Yeah, I believe so. I think it was Sutil.
Yeah, Sutil. And he basically went to the inside of Sutil. You know the track. The layout is a pit lane entry is on the left. And then, if you're on the track, pit entries on the left there, and then to the right, you go in through the chicane to go through the champions area. And Seudel decide, hey, or Kubica decides, hey, Seudel, I'm gonna pass you on the inside on the right, and then go right across the front of your nose into the pits.
Yeah, I mean,
It was dangerous.
basically, Seudel was passing him, and for some reason, he weaved to the inside of the track to defend his position. It just didn't make any sense because he was going to go straight into pit lane anyway. I mean, it's just, ah. So he ends up cutting across, and it was just absolutely daft, the maneuver. So,
Here's your sign. Let's see. Also, in our little steward's pick, or whatever you want to call it, another punishment, reprimand. These reprimands are getting out of control, but was handed out to STR's Jamie Alguersuari, who was involved in an incident with Rubens Barrichello, and he was also slapped. He breached Article 16.1 of the 2010 FIA Formula One Sporting Code. And then, last but not least, there had been a after you know the contact between Schumacher and Massa happened on the last lap, pretty much the last few corners there. And amongst all the celebrating with McLaren podiums and everything, it was lost that there was actually a inquiry into the event between Massa and Schumacher. And after hearing both sides of the story there, the stewards decided that it needed no further action, which I can say as a Schumacher fan, thank you, but that was a bit close. He should have got out of the way. He bounced off of Felipe Massa like a pinball as well.
Nice.
So
Massa just had a bad day.
yeah, that is one that he'll want to forget as well. So,
But the stewards were just, this season, it's nice to see that they're just not slapping everybody silly.
oh yeah.
But there are things, the concern is that they're calling races like NASCAR does.
Don't do this
Do it.
again.
Yeah, exactly. Please do it. Please.
Right?
Sounds like Bernie is got a seat on the stewards panel, and he's like, this is good for TV.
I like that. That appealed to my senses as I watched it on the television. I'll allow it.
He
So,
tells them, I visited Charlotte last weekend and I learned something new. It's a
about
new
coasting?
phrase that nobody's ever heard of. It's called competition caution.
Oh, God. Pretty soon
Just
we'll have Dean White checkers.
say there's debris in turn two.
Yeah, right. Safety car. Now that's appealing to the TV senses. However, those were not the only punishments handed out over the weekend, as qualifying also seemed its fair share of little funny things. Sebastian Vettel, he was fine. Weber, he had a gear, he had gearbox. Well, both of them had bad
Yeah.
gearboxes. Vettel ended up having a
Did you
bad.
love that in the race?
Yeah, you.
So, guys, should I try for fastest lap towards the end of the race? And they're like, absolutely not.
We're investigating a problem. What?
Yeah. That was just a riot to listen to. I mean, I think he, I th I personally think he was goading his team.
No, it was. So Vettel, gearbox problems in the race, but during quali, of course, Weber received his gearbox penalty for busted gearbox right before the race. And the big incident during qualifications was after Lewis Hamilton had taken pole. He was then offered a reprimand and fined $10,000 as well for stopping on the track and got out and just allowed the car to just, he got out, let the car coast down the straight, and then
Nice.
before pushing it back towards the pits, there was they were excuse me, goodness, they were that concerned with the fuel load and didn't think they were going to be able to get a good FIA sample of fuel, and thought that he was going to be so low that he stopped and pushed the car.
What a joke. This is a unique circumstance. I don't know if anybody ever thought about this. This is one of those unintended consequences of the rules, just like the unintended consequences of the rules that saw the situation with the yellow at Monaco, the safety car pulling in, and nobody knew what to, or everybody thought they understood the rules, but everybody interpreted differently than the FIA or whatever. Here's the situation. Last year, you had to start the race on the fuel load you intended to, you had to qualify on the fuel load you intended to start the race on. Well, this year, it's a little different, but it's kind of a gray area. So McLaren told him to shut it down on track.
Let it burn, and baby. Let it burn.
Here's the question. If he rolls around there and doesn't have enough for the FIA fuel sample, what happens? If he doesn't roll around the track, he's not burning off that fuel. Did he actually, how do you put this? Did he actually deserve his qualification time? Because he did it on less fuel than everybody else who fully intended to provide the sample at the end of their last lap.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's why the FIA has clarified their rules.
Oh, of course.
It's interesting, though, how much clarification that they have to do on their rules, you know? It just doesn't make much sense. You know, if there's not wiggle room in the rules, then, of course, they can't, you know, arbitrarily interpret them.
Of course. Of course. That makes it better for TV, apparently. We interpret the rules as we go.
And the FIA statement, any team whose car stops on the slowing down lap after the race will be asked by the stewards to explain why this happened. If they are not satisfied that the reasons were beyond the control of the driver or team and feel that this has been done deliberately to gain a competitive advantage, appropriate action will be taken.
Oh, no.
Give him a reprimand.
Yeah, right. Reprimand him. That fool. How dare you break the rules?
Oh, jeez.
How dare we write rules that actually make sense? Yes. there's your dosage of stewards fun for Canada. And I think that means that we are done with the actual Canadian portion of the race. Yes. But we do have some technological advancements and regulations that, you know, are coming out. Gray regulations, might I add, so that we can interpret them accordingly and cause as much controversy as possible. But the Ferrari seemed to be up to snuff again this weekend, or had a better weekend. They always perform well in Canada and the U.S. when they come here. But this up-and-coming race in Valencia, the Ferrari F10 is going to be heavily modified in its push for the championship. And will now sport Red Bull-style exhausts.
Oh, nice.
Oh, how nice.
Will it also sport Red Bull-style mechanics standing around the rear end of the car to make sure nobody takes a picture of it?
Nice, as well as maybe melting some of the suspension components.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Does that come with the Red Bull gearbox?
Oh, maybe.
Maybe.
That's a good idea. The reports coming out of the Spanish press anyways are saying that this new F10 should be looking at close to half a second a lap quicker than the basic spec that we have been seeing, especially in Turkey and Canada. There's also some new aero pieces coming out, not like little fins or anything, but new aero direction, and they're going to do some things with airflow, different areas for it to go. So basically what we're going to see is what would happen if a Red Bull and if you took a Red Bull and a Mercedes and crashed them together. Nice. Because I'm sure they'll be
fully mounted.
Yeah, right. I'm sure they'll be sporting the similar style air hoop as Mercedes, as well as these exhaust pipes. They think, oh, this will give us like at least another second on the field.
Yes.
And we can return to prominence.
I don't know. You know, I hate to be this way, but Ferrari is doing a whole lot of following the last few years and not a lot of leading. As far as on the design innovations, I mean, you look at the car this year, one of the features that stand out compared to last year's car are those funky little bumps on either side of the front nose. And those very much were Red Bull last year. And they're copying Red Bull's rear suspension as well, or trying to at least, which their rear suspension on the Red Bull works together with the exhaust system in a way that nobody seems to be able to fully explain or comprehend.
Nice.
Ooh.
Yeah, pretty much. So this will be fun to see. You know, some of the quotes that the Spanish newspaper brings up are quotes from like Alonso, basically saying the most important improvement in Valencia is not that what we achieve there, but the way it opens us developments to be stronger for the remainder of the season. So talking about the B-spec car coming to Valencia, but also the further development they can do on that car. Maybe they feel they're at an impasse on the A-spec of the car, that they've basically taken that as far as they can until they go ahead and add these, you know, funky underfloor radiation devices and whatever.
Did you just say movable floor?
No, but they're actually talking about movable rear wings now as a possible addition to the 2011 spec, because the movable front wing has worked so well.
Oh, yeah.
We hear all about it all the time.
It's such a difference maker.
Yeah, I tell you. They're talking about making the rear wing adjustable as well.
Oh, nice. That'll work well. Well, that's not the only thing. That's not the only waves that Ferrari is making this week, as they then came out and said that they, with the weight going up next year from 620 kilos to 640.
Whew.
Yeah, right. Whew, buddy. Ferrari is now going to run a KERS system in every race.
You know, one of the startling things about the article is not that they're talking about running the KERS, because we kind of knew the teams were still – they weren't withholding that one.
No.
For next season. But it's the most startling thing is the fact that the cars are going up 20 kilos next year. That's a lot. I mean, when you're talking about this season, they went from 605 to 620. Now they're going 620 to 640. Now that's 35 kilos in the last 2 years.
With the same skinny little tires.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
You think understeer is a problem then? Just wait till you get it now. Because it's going to be sliding everywhere.
It is interesting, though. We're talking about 75 additional pounds from the 2009 spec. So that's a lot.
Yeah, that's heavy. I don't know.
That's to make up for the additional weight of the Cosworth lump, I'm sure.
Well, you know, Ferrari says, oh, yeah, we're going to do KERS, and everybody's on board with us, and ha ha ha. Well, Mercedes GP have decided that, hot sun. The Mercedes GP decided that they probably are still in the air on KERS. They don't know if they're going to run them, and they said it's going to be about 6 weeks until they make, about 4 to 6 weeks before they make their decision on KERS, and you know, so says Ross Brawn, who, oh, by the way, is the technical chairman there at FODA, so you know, he kind of has to say so in all of that. So, you know, interesting.
Yeah, well, certainly. Oh boy, you know, waiting 4 to 6 weeks, that's probably about the same amount of time it's going to take before we finally hear who the freaking tire is going to be next year.
Oh, God.
This is getting to be quite annoying. I mean, we were talking about this, like two or three, like Turkey, we were supposed to hear who the tire supplier would be. But then the FIA came out, last week and basically, well, Todd came out last week and basically said, here's the deal. Don't really care what FOTA says because it's up to FOM and the FIA to make the decision on the tires, and we'll probably put it out for tender sometime. Okay. Yay. Please tell me, what is the spec for the tire? You know, you kind of have to clear this up for all the teams to design their cars around. So hopefully the FIA has basically told all these tire vendors, here's the deal. The tire shall be these dimensions and submit a tender for that type of tire so that the teams at least can design their suspensions of their cars and everything of that nature.
Oh, yeah. But God forbid if we have another incident where new teams come in with no technical regulations. Oof. USF won all over again.
Yeah. Well, you look at it, Pirelli may be edging closer to a tire deal, but Michelin came out this week and basically said, hey, you've got to make a decision because we actually have to develop the compounds. We have to actually give you race-working compounds, not just – by the start of the season, we've got to have it for you to test with and, play around with and everything of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you can just turn around a set of rubber overnight. but beyond that, you still also have, the potential 13th entry. Now, this week, the chairman or boss of Epsilon, Scotty, basically came out, this is Joan Villa de Prat or something like
that.
Villa de
what?
Prat.
What?
Villa de Prat.
Okay.
He's starting to get concerned that his team specifically might not have enough time to actually prepare an entry if they win the bid. And he's basically saying the FIA has told them it's going to be, after August before they decide who the 13th team will be for next year.
Oh, by the way, you need to have a car ready in January for testing.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yep. Yeah, it's no big deal. I mean, anybody can turn around a car overnight.
Oh, yeah.
Like that. I mean, there are, you could go on eBay and buy that carbon fiber tub that USF1 was working on.
I put a bid on it.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. Yes, I did.
It was only like $120 the last time I saw it, but I'm sure it went for much higher than that.
I was going to drive down there with my boss, and we were going to pick it up and bring it back and put it in my garage.
Nice.
I kid you not. We had a serious discussion about this. And then I clicked the bid button.
Nice. So.
All right. As you were. Sorry.
No, it's just this is a very valid concern. Lotus was able to do it, but I think Lotus is an outlier. I do not think any, especially a new team that's not coming in with some good technical background and technical information and possibly even a chassis from like a 2009 Toyota chassis to work off of.
Stefan!
Yeah, you've got a lot of work to do in a short amount of time. But probably the biggest thing that really needs to be talked about is all these teams submitted their information to the FIA about their funding and all this kind of stuff. But that funding's all on paper. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist. The fact that they don't have an entry pretty much guarantees that funding does not exist. And if they get the entry, there's no guarantee they will get the funding right away. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just ask USF1.
Oh.
So.
Toaster.
You not only have to, have all this funding secured for the hope that you get an entry. You also have to have that funding ready to go as soon as you get an entry so that you can design and develop and build a car as soon as possible with the money that you supposedly have. There's a lot of dominoes in there. When you're talking about drivers like a Graham Rahal, who just throw this out. In the U.S., the market is tough. A lot of these boards and businesses, they make decisions about motorsport, all their sponsorships and things like that. They make those decisions on their business year cycle. They don't make them based off of when, you know, people become available for, you know, as drivers and such. So Graham Rahal, 6 weeks before the season, finds out that he's not going to be driving in IndyCar this year. And it's all he can do to just go race by race to get funding here and there and everywhere to actually compete. Just think of how difficult it would be for a Formula One team that's trying to raise $70, $80, $90, $100 million to compete when Graham's talking about $2 to
$3 million. Yeah. It's going to be rough for those guys to get in there, you know.
Hopefully an organization like Epsilon would end up getting the entry, not just some fly-by-night, you know, toaster-producing magnate in yes, indeed, in Charlotte.
Well, speaking of other decisions from the world of F1 that needs to be made, and kind of a get-with-the-times bit as well, Bernie Ecclestone has said that, you want HD Formula One? Well, you're not getting it until 2012.
That's hilarious.
I'm like, what? Every other major sport in the world is in high definition. And
every other minor sport in the world is in high definition.
I was watching the College World Series in high definition. Who even cares about that?
I can watch dirt track racing in high definition on speed.
Oh, slap.
That's, dude, the feeder series in the States. I mean, last year I could watch Indy Lights in high definition.
Nice.
You just go through it. It's just ridiculous that the FIA, that Formula One is not in high definition. Just ridiculous. And if you're saying, but wait a second, it fills up my HD screen. Well, yeah, it does, but it's not high def. It's a 16:9 aspect ratio, but it is not high definition footage. So
nice. Yeah, it's awesome. Basically they took a fan survey and they're like, hey fans, what would you like to see with Formula One? Everybody's like, we want HD. Bernie says, piss off.
Yes,
it's like,
please,
what,
sir, can we have some HD?
No.
Jeez. You know, here's what the fans want. The fans want it available in high definition, and they want it available so they can download it.
Nice.
And, you know, I think that both of those are valid desires, but the problem is the rights that Formula One holds and how aggressively they defend those rights. You know how it is. You're browsing through YouTube, and there's a nice Formula One racing video, highlights from the past weekend or whatever, and you go to it and it's broken. It's busted. The rights holder has requested that this be taken down.
Oh, yes.
Yes. They aggressively defend those rights, and I don't think that they would give it to you in a way that you would desire. It would be streaming, and it would be ridiculously...
$400 for a season.
Nice. $400 per race.
Nice.
Because all you're going to do is find some way to capture it and put it on Pirate Bay.
Nice. Yeah, it's funny because they say, fans, what do you want? And we're like, HD, so says the survey. Bernie says, well, you're not getting HD because not enough people want it. Well, that's what we said on the survey. Well, that's not enough.
Yeah.
It's like, we could go HD tomorrow if we wanted to, but we don't think there's enough people at home able to watch it in high def, and we don't want to broadcast it unless people want it. Well, that's what they said wanted.
Here's the reason. Bernie has standing television contracts in place, and, well, there's this little problem. If they go high def, they've got to underwrite the cost of the new equipment. So to do that, they need to up their contracts, their agreements with these broadcasters.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the broadcasters are going to have to pay for it.
Oh, yeah. Yep. It's working its way out there. Darn you, Bernard Ecclestone. I hate your life. Anyways.
You know, he has made F1 what it is, and take the good with the bad. The bad is he's a money-grubbing old man who likes to dive in his money vault and swim in it.
Nice. We'll just start calling him Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah. And nice. Life in Duckburg is pretty sweet these days, let me tell you.
All right. Well, that's all we got for F1 this week, yeah?
That is all we have for F1 this week. We've already talked about the Le Mans race. We're not going to really dig into that anymore. However, there are a couple of things that did take place in the sports car world that are worthy of note. One of those being that they've actually published their regulations for 2011. Couple of things that came from the regulations and from all the stuff that they've done in the build-up to Le Mans. Okay. One of the things they announced was the Intercontinental Le Mans Cup.
Yes.
Yes, anyway, there have been some interesting things. We've got the American Le Mans Series and the Asian Le Mans Series, and the Asian Le Mans Series has run like two races in 12 years. it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. So anyway, the Le Mans Series is trying what it can do to make their series an international series, not just a regional series in the U.S. and then a regional series in Europe. So they're proposing this intercontinental schedule, the Intercontinental Le Mans Cup schedule. This year's schedule will include Silverstone, Petit Le Mans, and Zhuhai in China. Yes, made with China. Now you go into 2011, though they're looking at expanding that significantly. You know, you've got Sebring for ALMS, you've got Spa from the Le Mans series. Of course, you've got Le Mans as part of that, which will pay double points to the
double
series.
Double points.
Sounds a bit like the IRL did for a while. Anyway, then later on you will go to Silverstone in the Le Mans Series, the Petit Le Mans in ALMS, Mount Fuji in Asian Le Mans Series, and a China date to be determined, probably looking for whatever track actually has the coolest made with sign in the stands.
Nice. Made with China.
Yes, indeed. So
Anyways, okay, as you were saying.
Yeah, you know, it's just it's good to see them doing this. It's not something that I'm terribly interested in because it's all these, you know, non-spectator friendly events, to
yeah,
be
right.
quite honest. Yeah, well, you know, you can follow the box scores in the paper just like you do baseball because nobody actually watches that on television.
Oh, that's a low blow. I watch it on television. I watch.
Yes, and what are you doing at the time?
I was iRacing.
Yes, hundreds of other things because it really isn't worth paying attention to, some, you know, on its own. Maybe in the World Series. Maybe.
You're so hateful.
No, not hateful.
Love going
out to the ballpark, but just can't really stand. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. Well, let's see. Did we get into the regs?
The regs? No, we did not. Yes. Here's basically what will happen. GT1 does no longer exists. It is gone.
Yay.
GT2, however, will be split into two classes.
What?
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting thing and an interesting approach. One of the problems I see is they have all these privateer entries, the gentlemen sports car drivers, the doctors and lawyers who have buttloads of money and don't know what to do with it.
Oh, the Marty Roths of the sports
Yes, the
car
Marty
world.
Roths of the world.
Who
yes,
don't
yes.
suck as bad.
Nice. But they really have no chance for competing for wins.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part. So what they wanted to do was create two GT categories. They've got a GT Pro and a GT Amateur groupings among the GT class. Their goal is that the GT Pro class would have the newest versions of the cars, and the GT Amateur class would be privateer entries, you know, 2 and 3 and 4 year old cars.
Okay.
That still adhere to the regulations.
And everybody wins.
Pretty much nothing is going to change on the GT class, though, other than, you know, the addition of the amateur. At least it's not challenge class.
Oh, my God. We got enough of those.
The last thing they want to do is touch anything on the GT2 class because, oh my goodness, it works and it works well right now.
Yeah, it's the moneymaker for all the Le Mans series.
As expected, the P1 cars basically are going to get the P2 car engines. That's been known for a while. So Honda's V6 will move up to, you know, their LMP1 effort. Maybe. We'll just wait and see if that ever pans out.
Turbo diesels.
Yes, and the P2 class will be running. This is going to be exciting. They're going to be running production-based engines.
Oh, nice.
With much less horsepower, but basically you should be able to go out and buy these engines. So, pretty sweet. Speaking of those production-based engines, almost immediately, and this is one of the gripes that Honda's had with the IndyCar series.
Okay.
They haven't been able to work hand-in-hand with the IndyCar series to basically persuade and direct their engine specs, which I think is a funny little gripe because what exactly have you done? Well, you've worked hand-in-hand with the IndyCar series to tell them, we're the only people who make engines for your series currently. This is what we're going to do, and you're going to like it.
Are you not going to have races?
Yes, make them an offer you can't refuse. You'll wake up with a leaky, busted head gasket.
Nice. Nice. Dun, dun, dun.
So anyway, Honda went ahead and they announced their new LMP2 engine for 2011. It is a V6 2.8-liter twin-turbo engine. They haven't really talked about what horsepower range they'd be putting it up to, but they did point out that this is pretty much the same platform that they would like to use for the IndyCar series and so on. So pretty sweet.
Nice. And there you have it.
Yeah, that's Le Mans.
Le Mans. All right, well, we shall jump into Rally for just a moment because there are a couple things that happened over the week. First off, Phil Mills, the legendary co-driver to Petter Solberg, was with Solberg for every race but three. And what else was it? Every race and including the one championship that he had. He retired.
I have a conspiracy theory.
What's that?
That's because he was not acceptable to the Citroën factory effort.
Oh, no. Now.
Better will be driving in next year.
Nice.
Oh, come on. You knew it was going
to
come up.
Yes, it had to be. Let's see. So, yeah, that's what happened there. Tragic because – well, not tragic in a bad way, but tragic because, you know – Petter is now going to have to go back and relearn pretty much everything. You know, when you're with somebody that long doing co-driving and you put your trust into them and you have such a system laid out, you know, the way it is, it's always going to be tough to go and find somebody else to do his job. But the show goes on, and Petter Solberg has made it quite, quite honest that he's not going to stop rally driving. He can't stop rally driving, really. He sat out 1 year and he almost had a heart attack. So, yeah. And then also, news coming out about the, what do you call it? The new cars. The new S2000T, as I like to call them. The manufacturers are a little peeved at the FIA. And the amount of time it took them to release the technical regulations. You don't say.
Go figure.
Yeah, right? That never happens. But Ford and both Ford and Citroën are looking at maybe only having four cars ready in time for the championship, where we have the, you know, the WRC cars are going away. No real way to grandfather them in. So, you know, it's one of those kinds of things where it's going to be you're not going to have very many cars on track that are a factory effort. So You'll have, obviously with Mini perhaps coming in with Pro Drive, you'll have a couple more. But, teams, because of the amount of time it took to approve these things, as usual, they are only going to have about four cars, which raises a number of questions. Because if you're somebody like Ford, you have five, right now Ford has five and sometimes six guys. On the payroll there. I mean, and especially at the top flight, what are you going to do about what are you going to do? You've got Mikko Hirvonen, Jari Mäty, Henning Solberg, and Matthew Wilson. There's your four cars.
Sweet.
Ken Block, sorry about your luck, apparently. Now, Ford says that they can produce cars a lot quicker and they can meet the demand if they have to. The chassis, obviously, the Fiesta chassis has already been, in production, and the real only concern for Ford is with the turbocharged 1.6-liter engine. That is where the problem lies. Obviously, Citroën as well has DS3s that are not competing, but they have been testing. And Citroën's already come out and said, hey, we're only going to have that many cars. We do not like to rush these. A specific statement from Mr. Kisnell. I think the most we can get is four cars. We are having to rush, and this is not the way Citroën likes to do things. Normally, we like to take our time and to test and to make sure everything is right, but in this case, it's not possible. I like to think we can get four cars for round one, though. So, a lot of the guys, first round may be a bit tough. And it may actually be a good idea to go ahead and merge with the IRC for a race,
Nice.
because that's the only way you're going to get enough car count to even matter. So we'll have to see. Malcolm Wilson, he's always the optimist. Obviously, time is short, but we've got a pretty good track record at getting cars ready against the clock. I've got no doubt that we'll get it sorted. Everything is coming together well. We've had an engine on the test bed for some time, but the engine is constantly evolving and developing. We're not close to the final specification, but we will be by the end of the summer. So, as you remember, the Ford Fiesta S2000 actually was right up against the clock when Monte Carlo came out. It was actually homologated like a week or two before the race. So, yeah, they're all about. They're all about really pushing and getting the cars done. So, shouldn't be much of a problem for Ford, but it sounds like it's really got Citroën in a bunch. So,
Yes, indeed.
and that is all I have for rally this week. Ta-da! Thanks for listening, guys. No, but
Not a whole lot going on in IndyCar either.
no.
And close the show out with IndyCar. The first thing that we really want to hit on IndyCar is the IndyCar series today released their investigation on the Sumona fire at Texas. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to look at this and figure out that the response was bad, slow, inept, and ill-equipped because the guys jumped out and they started yanking on the bumper hose. And there's one guy standing. You watch the video. There's a guy standing there with, the hose nozzle in his hand, and he's waiting on the other guy to get it, whatever. While nobody is out there with canister fire extinguishers.
I'm on
And
fire.
basically, their press release on this basically says that's the first thing that should have been done is that the can should have been, and it wasn't. So additional training will need to be done. Then the second thing they say is that the first car to the scene, well, excuse me. The second thing they say is that the hose itself was kinked when it was wound up. So they had a pre-race test of the equipment, but when they wound it up after the pre-race test, it got tangled. So that's a bad thing, and they're human errors. It was a comedy of errors and bad mistakes. And I said this before, I will say it again. This is one of the only traveling safety crews in motorsport.
Yep.
Their staff, they go through this in their press release. A safety team consists of 24 highly trained professionals with a minimum of 14 at each race. 2 trauma physicians, 3 paramedics, 9 firefighters, and EMTs per race. You know, team members have something on the average of 20 years of experience in their respective areas. So there's a pretty high level that they've got. And this is kind of the offshoot. You know, it's not the CART safety team. It's not, you know, the Dr. Terry Trammell, who basically got to Alex Zanardi when Alex had lost 70% of the blood in his body. It was on the track. And Dr. Terry Trammell was able to save Alex Zanardi's life because of how quickly they responded to the incident. Alex Zanardi should not be alive after having both legs severed at Lausitz Ring. However, Terry Trammell was there to save his life. This is the level. This is kind of the legacy that the IndyCar series has somewhat inherited. They tried to live up to the same safety standards as the CART traveling safety team, and now the CART traveling safety team does not exist. So, you know, they're the spiritual successor. And they take it very seriously. However, in this incident, it was not taken very seriously, and these guys looked inept, and the training has to change or the guys have to be fired.
Well,
dude, you look at the tape, they didn't follow their own procedures.
No, they didn't.
Which was, right. One, get out the fire bottle and put out the fire. Mm-hmm. The cute little bumper hose, what a nice idea. But when the second car pulled up, when the second truck pulled up, they did the same thing. They jumped out and started yanking on the bumper hose.
That was a noble concept in its infancy.
Certainly. Here's the thing. The fire bottles can get out there quicker. They can, they're in your hand when you get out of the truck. You respond immediately with it. There's no yank it on a hose. There's no messing around with the equipment. It's already deployed.
Yep.
So in the future, it might be a very cute idea that Holmatro had to throw on the front of the cars. But let me tell you, it failed epically in its first use.
Yeah, and you're going to need some bigger pea shooters than those little ones that they were spraying. You need some,
yeah,
some heavy-duty fire.
There was a failure with the chemical. Yeah, anyway,
how many failures did we have here? This sounds biblical.
Too many. Absolutely too many. Somebody on Trackform posted a side-by-side. They posted 2009 Ed Carpenter wreck at Chicago, which basically looked the same. He got up against the outside wall. The car came down to the inside of the track. And, you know, in that instance, the guys got out of the car. They got their fire extinguishers with them and had the car out in a matter of seconds. Mm-hmm. No questions asked, no incident, no nothing. Basically, Ed Carpenter's car came to rest, and within 5 seconds of when his car came to rest, there were safety workers with fire bottles in hand moving towards the car.
Very nice.
So, you know, in this instance, just like we said, it's a comedy of errors that happened. Unfortunately, the repercussions could have been somebody losing, or having significant burns all over their body.
Yeah, well, the way it was going with her, she would have lost her life. That fire was raging.
Yeah, well,
it was only getting bigger.
The other thing that does need to be looked into is that cockpit surround. You can explain it away and say that the cockpit surround is fine because the safety crew should be there in time, that you wouldn't have to worry about how quickly you can get out of the car. That's bunk. You have got to be able to have your driver in and out of that car as quickly as possible. And that cockpit surround made extraction very difficult under those circumstances.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It needs to be looked at, the release of that cockpit surround. So,
well, that wrapping up the safety aspect of the show, we do have 2 driver notes for the Iowa race this weekend.
Sweet.
Graham Rahal is in at Iowa for Ryan Reinbold, taking over the Thomas Schechter backup job. So he will drive where Schechter was at Texas. Rahal will be there for Iowa in support of Mike Conway. Which, by the way, I seen a picture of Mike Conway as he went and visited the Ryan Reinbold guys, and man, he looks in a bad way.
Banged up, yes.
Yeah, I felt bad for him. I really did. He's just like, hey, guys. And you're just like, wow, that really hurt. And then also Ryan Hunter-Reay, whose contract with Andretti Autosport was to run out at the end of Texas due to funding from Izod running out, he will in fact be in with Andretti this weekend at Iowa with the U.S. ethanol industry colors, colors that are familiar to Ryan Hunter-Reay, as those are the ones that he ran in 07 and 08.
Sweet. So, I am next.
Yeah. Yeah, so he will be there, and he will be at the track supporting that old it's a bit different of a livery than the old one, but it's much the same in principle, and will also still have Izod on the car as well. So
cool.
Nice. And before we get into the Iowa preview, you have one other bit of technical IndyCar stuff that you would like to throw out there for us?
Oh, yeah. Cosworth is targeting a return to IndyCar.
Oh, God. Now we're going to have Cosworth into the grid in IndyCar, too.
Well, hang on. Who knows exactly how this is going to pan out? Really, it's just quotes and comments at this point. But you look at the fact that Cosworth was willing to slap their name on the side of the Lotus at Indy.
Yep.
Cosworth Lotus, which is just a contradiction of terms because it's not a Cosworth engine and it is not a Lotus chassis.
No.
But that said, there's been a lot of talk that Mr. Kalkoven is looking at getting a Cosworth, a Lotus badged Cosworth engine into the IndyCar series as early as maybe next. Well, not next year, but the following year.
2012.
And that would be beyond sweet. Now, it does depend on what the IndyCar series decides their regulations are for the engine specs, exactly what the badging requirements are, or, you know, who can own an engine. Are we going back to open engine, or excuse me, basically owning your own engine or leases or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
The most lucrative for the series, though, is having good manufacturer relationships, which basically means engine leases. So who knows how this is going to pan out. But at this point, I would say that this is at least a 20% proposition.
That would be interesting. Cosworth, that brings me back to the days of the old Cosworth, what was it, Ford Cosworth and the Lola chassis for Michael Andretti there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes, indeed.
Those were the days.
Yeah. Now this person from Cosworth, this Mr. Gallagher, he basically said not only would they be looking at IndyCar series, but also American Le Mans series, because it sounds like everybody's agreeing that the IndyCar and the American Le Mans series engine specs are fairly similar now.
Mm, yeah, good enough.
Kind of something the Iconic Committee, or not the Iconic Committee, but the engine summits that they had at Indy over the last year and a half. That was kind of one of the things that they were pushing for. Now, I think more or less Honda has made this happen because they basically said, hey, IndyCar series, here's the specs we're building for in ALMS. How about you make yours the same? Or, you know, we could always go do something else.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. We could. We'll do it.
We could. Indeed.
Do it. And finally this weekend we have a race. We have the Iowa mile and a half. What is it? Mile and a half oval again?
Yes. No. Sorry. 7/8.
7/8 of a mile. Okay. So we have a shorter track for Iowa. Were we out there saying that we hope Iowa gets kanksed?
No.
Oh, we weren't?
No, indeed not. Iowa is...
That was me.
It's
my fault.
It's a breath of fresh air on the schedule, actually, having a short oval on the schedule now that Milwaukee is gone and the other one, Richmond, is gone.
Yeah, that other guy. What's his name?
Yeah, Richmond was fairly forgettable as an event on the IndyCar series. Milwaukee is not. That said, going into this weekend, Iowa and Indy are the drivers' ovals And to an extent, Motegi as well. The rest of them are more engineers' ovals. They're all about aero setup. So you look this weekend for some other things to happen. Look for this not to be a Penske Ganassi dominated oval. You know, in the end, most likely one of those guys is going to win, but you're going to see a bunch of funny names up at the top. And my pick to win the race is Justin Wilson.
Really?
Reason being, Iowa is very close to an oval, or excuse me, very close to a street course, very close to a road course, with the fact that the race is in the driver's hands.
Mm-hmm.
The advantage of setup, of engineer setup data, it is kind of mitigated because of the way the track is laid out, the shortness of the track. That said, I think Justin Wilson is keyed, primed, and ready to go. And he has a good teammate this weekend with Graham Rahal. Now, first weekend with the team, that's asking a lot for Graham to do phenomenal, but I think Mr. Wilson is due. If not Wilson, I would pick Willpower.
Interesting. My pick for the Iowa Corn 250 or whatever they call it is Marco Andretti.
Yeah. Fanboy.
Does not matter. I'm serious. They've ran good the last two ovals. I think
you're
it's
right.
Their time.
You're right.
They've got good race pace. And on a track like this, you know, driver's track, I think he'll win. I predict that he will. I predict that he will win. They've come close. It is their time.
Well, we'll have to see. I think that it's too much to ask without Brian Herta on the team to get that late yellow, but.
Oh, yeah. Take that. That's what you get.
All right.
Well, last bit of the show, I promised some folks that I would try to work this in, is sim racing. And I will make a push for the listeners of the show to go over to the iRacing webpage, register up with iRacing Motorsport Simulations. It is a great time, great fun. All you need is a subscription, kind of like World of Warcraft, and a steering wheel, which hooks up to your computer, and a computer that is reasonably powered. If you have anything within the last probably a year and a half or two, you'll be good to go. But it's so much fun, a lot of great action, and you know, they've got rookie levels, beginner levels, professional levels, all kinds of cars. I've actually drove the Indy car at Indianapolis. I bought that package, so I drove it there. Not good. I can go into turn one flat out. Doesn't mean I'm coming out.
Nice.
So
not gonna lift.
Yeah, I'm not going to lift, and oh, do I pay for it. So, but, you know, haven't done it. I've done a lot of the rookie challenge races because I'm just not that. My license level is not hard. I am apparently a liability at this point. Understandable. And so that's what we're looking at. So you should go over there. There's people already listening to the show that, you know, participate rather in some of these races, and they've got just a lot of really cool things going on over there. You can drive NASCAR if you're a NASCAR fan, even though we don't cover it. Indy cars, they've got V8 supercars, Mustang, Can-Am cars. They've got old 1979 Lotus F1 car. They have Riley prototypes from that bastardized endurance racing series. As well as, you might like this, Silver Crown cars.
Ooh, yes. Actually, the problem with those, though, they're the new Silver Crown cars, the cars that don't exist anymore because they, just sucked. But anyway.
They also have modifieds, you know, late models, stock cars, or whatever it is you guys get into. As well as Skip Barber cars, Star Mazdas, VW Jetta TDI Cup, and then, of course, the rookie class with the Pontiac Solstice and the Ford Legend.
Nice.
Which I have piloted to victory. Actually, last night I performed in a race on a short track, and I went it was a 40-lap race, and I went flag to flag and won the race. by 11 seconds.
Very nice.
So, yeah. So, look at me. Look at that. Look at me now. I boast. I boast. And I give horn.
Nice.
I have a you fever. Know. And the only thing, the only prescription is Mahon.
Nice. Oh, jeez. Yeah, you know, and let's be blunt. iRacing is pretty much the only motor racing you're going to get for quite a while because, you know, we've got console games coming out in the fall.
Yep.
If you're a Sony fanboy, the newest moving target for the Gran Turismo 5 release is November 2nd.
Finally. Subject to change.
Subject to change. It's like trying to pass Milka Duno. You don't know where she's going to be.
Oh, slap.
But, yes, and then also you've got the F1 titles coming out across the console space in the fall, along with the rally game. So there's a lot to look forward to.
have you seen screenshots of those games?
No, I have not.
The Formula One game that Codemasters is doing looks epic.
Nice.
It looks awesome. I'll have to send you some. I'll have to send you the link to it before, you know, tomorrow or something. But the screenshots of that game look amazing.
What about screens for the WRC game? Are we seeing anything yet? I mean, I've seen one or two, but they were just, you know.
They dropped a few. They had a couple Citroens. Ow. I just stubbed my toe. Sorry.
Yeah.
There's a couple Citroens screenshots that look pretty good, and then there's a really sweet screenshot of the Ford Focus jumping over a crest, so it looked really good. I don't know if that's like a little movie or if that's what the game's actually supposed to look like.
Nice.
But either way, motorsports, in terms of console games and sim games and everything, is going to get really cool come this fall.
Yeah.
So... And
now, as always, the Gran Turismo release will not have the F1 license, so they won't be having F1 races per se. However, it was released at E3, which is going on this week. It's a good week to hear information about these types of games because E3 is ongoing currently, and everybody's trying to whore out the information for their said
nice.
Product. But Gran Turismo actually will have the license to have Red Bull properties. Which specifically was pointed out, meaning the Red Bull Racing and STR cars. I'm assuming STR, I know it said Red Bull Racing. Sebastian Vettel was actually part of a promo video they did. But all of those things together, it will be probably incorporated much like they were in previous versions of the game where you could drive a Ferrari or whatever. At least it will have the livery. I think Gran Turismo 3, they had the cars, but they were basically a red car that was labeled F2007 or M2003 or whatever, you know.
Nice.
They didn't really say what it was. So,
well, iRacing... on that Formula note, just came out a couple months ago and said that they're going to have they went all in with Williams Formula One and you will be able to purchase a model, not really a model, but the simulator for the Williams Cosworth now, I guess, or Williams, was it
nice.
Williams Cosworth?
Yeah.
So yeah, they'll be out there as well. So I will be able to drive the Williams F1 car, which means of one of two things: either I'm going to have a suspension failure, or some random failure, or I will have a Cosworth failure.
Oof.
So you know, but yeah, that's it. And if you will be on this weekend, I think I have somebody who is actually working an open paddock nationwide car for me this weekend. That doesn't make sense. I know. Sacrilegious. We don't.
I think that's a good note to end the podcast on.
Yes. Yeah, right. but this week we do have it's the Road America 200 that the iRacing is putting on. That is actually it's going to be, no kidding, 200 miles, because the nationwide cars are going to Road America to do a race, and so now they're going to have, you know, you can get obviously the nationwide car and Road America as a pick, and now you now they're going to actually have a 200 mile race. So I will be there in the rookie category, of course. Don't want to slow anybody up and have them mad at me. So I will be there. So yay.
Yay.
200 miles Sunday night as I listen to Dave Despain.
Oof.
Wind Tunnel.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Did you catch Mr. Block on Wind Tunnel this week?
I did. Nothing new.
Nothing new.
He kinda...
That's usually how it goes with the interviews. I mean.
And... The funny thing I thought was how Kim Block kept saying, like, every time Dave Despain asked him a question, he's like, that's a really good question and a tough question.
Nice.
And I kept having flashbacks to that, what is that, like, Office Max commercial. Wow, that's a low price. But nice. Instead it was like Kim Block, wow, that's a tough question. He's like, just give us the answer, man, please. So... But apparently he asked him a question in regards to the Ford deal and what all that entailed. And it just entailed rally racing. So I guess that's really it. He wanted to do WRC, and Monster wanted him to do WRC. So he said Ford gave me the chance to do it, and now I have to do everything with Ford.
Yeah.
Which I think he's less than keen about. Given his current Rally America performance and the fact that he's got to make a little pocket rocket Fiesta do Gymkhana 3. Urf.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see how Gymkhana 3 turns out and see how many balloons and fluorescent tubes he can bust.
Speaking of which, at Mid-Ohio, we need to do that. I'm just going to walk up and hit you with a fluorescent bulb.
I don't think that would be a good idea.
No. Just... All right. Well, that's all we have for this week, so we'll quit rambling about all the things video game and Speed TV. Be sure to catch the next episodes of Pinks and the NASCAR Talent Show. Oh, ugh. Or maybe not.
Yes, yes.
I would rather watch Barney and Friends with my kids than watch that. So.
Ooh.
Yeah, low blow, I know, but what are you going to do? Give me Speed 2, damn it. So, all right. Well, that's all. You got anything else for us tonight, Mike?
Nope, that's all I got this evening.
All right. Well, again, please stop by openpaddock.net. Hit us up on the Facebook. Hit us up on the Twitter. Hit us up on numerous different things, the website. We had our first submission to the op-ed or the op-ed bit. It was very good. It was actually a brilliant piece on the WRC. And so you too can produce articles for the webpage if you like. So, yep, that's all we have. So,
yes.
I do it just to annoy you. So,
good night.
All right, yeah, y'all take it easy. Thanks a lot.